You're listening to Cindy's Voice, a podcast that aims to raise awareness and advocate for the enslaved in an effort to end sex trafficking and sexual exploitation. Together, we're a community that educates, equips, and empowers you to take action against modern-day slavery. Every episode, we bring you inspirational stories of survivors who have been through the ordeal of human trafficking and sexual assault. In addition, we interview key advocates in the anti-trafficking movement and have them share their comments on the detrimental effects of human trafficking in our society. Now, here is your host, Cindy.
Hi, welcome back to Cindy's Voice podcast. You are listening to the second part of episode 4 with Windy, a former sex child trafficking survivor. Let's continue with our conversation. Here you go.
We want to be seen as humans, healed, healthy, and whole. And we want those we serve to be seen as humans, healed, healthy, and whole. And you don't get that reading a book. Or, you know what I mean? Like, so telling our stories and being able to stand up and say the fight is worth it. Look, I'm alive. I am alive. I should not be alive. I'm alive and I'm doing something powerful and something valuable with my life. Every single person out there being trafficked and exploited is worth the fight.
And let's just say it again, you are alive, and that is a miracle. You know that, I know that, because when you live through what we have lived and when you start educating yourself into what's going on modern slavery, you learn that the expectancy of a victim is 7 years. We are just value for 7 years. And a lot of us die after 7 years. So that is something that is powerful, that's strong. And I'm so grateful that you're still with us. In the trafficker's mind and operandum, what happens is that after 7 years, they already exploit you so much that it's not worth for them to keep having you. The clients have already know you, remember you, and so they need to refresh, per se. So they contact the other part of the world, and that's the black market. And so they put you into action. Someone is going to buy you. And what is your destiny? Well, your destiny is going to be sold for organ traffic industry. And that is sad, but there is a stats already, there's a lot of studies, and that's the reality. Whether you are a victim right here in the United States, or in Africa, or in Asia, or in another continent, that's what happened with human trafficking survivors or victims at the point of after 7 years.
And even though, let's say life expectancy, like absolutely, I believe that there's truth to that statistic, but our brains, our bodies, the way that we've been created is remarkable and so capable of healing. Like I have helped girls where on my first contact with them, they were, you know, not in the best shape. And I mean mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. Whereas if you didn't have that vision, if you didn't know it was possible, you would be like, what? It would almost be better if this girl had died. That's the sad truth, right? Like that's how they present themselves. But I know, not only through my story, but the story of so many other survivors, that girl has every chance, and there's so much possibility for her to be restored. And you know, and that's her journey. And all we have to do is provide the path and provide the resources, provide the encouragement, and there's hope and a happy ending at the end of all that vile trauma that the person never deserved. So they're worth the fight to me. And I try to inspire and empower people to fight as hard as I do, because it's part of who we are as human beings. Well, and I can tell you too, and this part of my message has just developed over the last 3 years, I would say, but really more so over the last year, is, we need to really honor people who do share their story, because they're putting themselves out there to be judged, to be, you know what I mean? Like you don't get positive attention all the time from sharing your story. And it's really sad. And so I think that we as a community need to stand behind those who are brave enough and who are risking their lives many times. You know, the more I started to share my story and the more confident I got in not only where I was, but where I was going, I would share more of my story. I think that that's a natural process. Not realizing I was putting myself into some serious danger. My traffickers have never been dealt with. They know who I am. I know who they are. And, you know, and I'm good. I'm good. I trust and believe in a God who is going to deal with that. You know, I'm not going to do anything to expose, you know, my trafficking story. I want to live. But we have to take that into consideration.
And like you, Wendy, there is a lot of people just not going forward. They are okay with what happened and leaving karma and God to take care of it. And I want to tell them that is 100% fine. That is a good decision. That is okay. Not everybody needs to go forward. And if that is your decision, we accept your decision. It is okay.
We're creating the resources. We've got good stuff, but of course we need more. We need more safe houses. We need more viable and ethical programs. You know, because the more we're making this movement as powerful as it's becoming, the more those who are going to come out and need help.
I think that's what I love about the Me Too movement. Like, before, we never heard any stories, and we didn't know how obnoxious, TV and modeling and all that was until the first person talked. And that's the magic of sharing your story.
Yeah.
One person did it. Oh, there's an echo. Oh, my God, there's so many echoes that now we can understand. This was like the base behavior for them. And so if we really want to change something, we need to make it more obvious, because unless people understand how bad and obvious the situation is, they're not going to help us eradicating X, O, J, or Y behavior itself. So
yeah,
that's why I love the Me Too movement. Now, the Me Too movement started with one topic, and it's been increasing in any other topics, but I think that Me Too movement actually can embrace a lot of situations.
Oh, sure. And it's right in line with the human trafficking, the issue of human trafficking and exploitation, right?
Yes.
Because exploitive situations can turn into trafficking really quickly. And that's how I describe exploitation and trafficking. Like, what's the difference? You know, I would have people fight me on, she just took her shirt off and took a picture and sold it for $100. She wasn't trafficked. So you have to unpack that, right? And be like, well, actually she was trafficked through exploitation. And it helps people to understand. But I had to step away from crisis care work really for the last year. For the last year, I've not taken any crisis calls. I've directed them elsewhere because I really feel like I'm shifting into another lane, which is, right, that's a good thing. And so being primary lane, not being victim services anymore, I will always be an advocate But I really think an educator and a trainer and someone who can now bring to the table my professional experience along with my life experience to help those who want to help. It kind of did a full circle. It started in Montana, moved to Miami, and then from there I went to North Dakota. And really it was the just a progression of becoming a professional in the fight against human trafficking. I had opened up the first safe house for minor victims of exploitation and trafficking in Montana. I served victims really from 12 years old up because there was no one else. So, but my primary focus were the youth. And then from there, I had gone to a Shared Hope conference and learned about Christie House and Project Gold in Florida. And they were looking to have a survivor advocate position, which they still do, and it's absolutely wonderful. So I went there and I became an advocate. I then became a caseworker. And and then I actually had gone back to Montana to visit my family. And a couple people came up to me and started talking about the North Dakota oil boom. And I was like, I had no idea. I didn't even know where North Dakota was. Like, it was so far off my radar. And this one guy at church actually came up to me and he's like, "Oh my gosh, I have a story to tell you. I'm over in the North Dakota oil fields in a man camp." And I was like, "What the heck is a man camp?" And he said he heard a group of guys ordering some girls on a Friday night. And one of the guys had made the joke, "Hey, ask if they have any 11-year-olds.
They're ordering, they're like calling the Chinese restaurant for a pickup.
Yeah, that's how I envisioned it, right? And that's how he described it. And he said that what bothered him was that nobody was pissed, excuse my language,
except him.
That dude said something about buying a kid for sex. Like I would think the natural male response would be, excuse my language again, to beat the crap out of someone, you know, who wants to order a child for sex. Even if he was just joking, his buddy should have been like, "Dude, don't joke like that." and so that's, he said, it's just bothered me ever since I saw that. And I was like, what is going on in North Dakota? Is anybody else paying attention to this? And I started hearing stories. And then I went to go, this is the full circle, I went to go hang out with my youth group girls I had loved on for many years, and check in with them, see how they were doing, because I was headed back to Florida for a possible job with the state's attorney's office. Okay. And one of my girls came up to me, super, super excited, 14 years old, and said, "Oh my gosh, Wendy, I'm leaving Friday to North Dakota to work on a food truck making $1,000 a week."
And you just heard that story. So.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, now I was like serious. Now I was like, where the hell is North Dakota and how do I get there? Yeah. And that's exactly what I did. I hopped on a train, made arrangements to stay with a friend of a friend of a friend for a few days because I had to see what a man camp was. I had to see what is an oil boom. Like, just common sense would say an influx of men with a lot of money, prostitution, otherwise known as human trafficking, is going to follow. It was a no-brainer, right? I got off the train and I was like, holy, it was bad.
Okay, now I need to go to North Dakota.
Well, it's not the same, I'm going to say, which is good, But the oil boom slowed a few years back, which removed a part of the problem. But the corruption in North Dakota wants the world to think that human trafficking has never existed, doesn't exist, and isn't going to exist. And I'm still speaking on your delusional, you know, and so I did. I went over there and I thought, okay, I'm going to go to the domestic violence shelter. Everyone I talked to, some people kind of knew about human trafficking, but they definitely wanted to bitch about the hookers that were there. And so I was like, okay, obviously this place needs education. They need to stop calling these people hookers. And I'm going to go to the domestic violence shelter, and went there, connected with an FBI victim advocate, and hearing their stories, I was like, somebody needs to step up and do something. And I actually got on the phone and called a bunch of those big organizations, Polaris and Shared Hope. And I was like, hey, you guys need to pay attention to North Dakota. There's, you know, nobody, everybody pretty much had the same reaction I did of like, what's going on in North Dakota?
tell us about it.
Or they were neck deep in their own work, in their own lanes, in their own territory. And I just have to say, it was a supernatural, incredible, like, I cannot describe what it feels like to know that your steps are ordered by God and you're on a mission. You are exactly where you are supposed to be, doing what you're supposed to do. That was my North Dakota experience. And I have, even though it was horrific in a lot of ways, it was beautiful, it was disastrous, it was a lot of different things. But what it was for me is, for those 4 or 5 years that I was there, I knew that I was there on purpose.
I cannot imagine the amount of opposition you had to deal with.
Opposition is a polite word. The good old boy system that is rooted very deeply in states like the Dakotas is very real. Corruption is very real. The oppression of women being in subjection to men. So, like, I had all these different barriers, right? Like, I'm an ex-sex worker. I'm an ex-trauma survivor. I am a trauma survivor, not an ex, right? I'm a woman. I do speak up. I do challenge people if they're not right. I was definitely not going over there to tell them to do things my way. I was definitely going to make sure things were done the way they needed to be done to protect those that were vulnerable and to serve those that needed an exit. And I pushed some buttons.
You know, I love that survivor community. This survivor community is really united. We are not only trying to help other victims and survivors to get out of this horrible thing and to thrive, but we are trying to do something about it. And that is not easy. And so I love our community.
Kind of touched on the fact that I had to step away for a minute and I had to reassess where's my lane and what I'm doing. And of course you always have those people of like, oh, she just is doing this for the fame or attention or money or the money or whatever. And I'm like, I used to, like, I needed to defend that. I needed to be like, you have no idea. I've gotten to the place now to where I don't need to defend it. I know why I share my story, and I have seen what sharing my story has accomplished. So those people can sit down. I'm not going to pay attention to them. And the goal is, right, is to pave the way for my story to do what Annie Lobert's story did for me, for my story to do it for somebody else. And it's constant unlocking of doors and destroying barriers and taking down false belief systems. And there's lanes created. Like when even 10 years ago, when I got into this work, we were so grassroots. A lot of us survivors came in like wrecking balls. Like we were just like, and then we learned these are deeply embedded systems that have been in place that give people positions of power and control. And we're dealing with much more than just a trafficker. We're dealing with a systemic, deep-rooted issue that gives men primarily the false belief system that they can own us and oppress us.
And that is horrible because we are talking about sexual assault, sexual exploitation and human trafficking, but with sexual, the mentality of men owning women, you know, like this society that we as, you know, humans created over all these years, I've been finding one topic that this is going to be another episode along with the podcast, because I think it's important. Why men, even when they're married to the wife, believe that they can just have sex, turn around and have sex with the woman. They don't ask, do you want to, do you feel like it? Like, where this possession mentality on wives and girlfriends and people came from?
You know where? I mean, one, it's just been an oppressive belief system that's deeply embedded in our beings, right? And if it's that coming from that toxic masculinity at all, it's going to get perverted. But the epidemic of, and this is a whole nother rabbit trail, I can, you know, you'll probably, and maybe you already are thinking of doing an episode on the roots of pornography.
Oh yeah, I'm working, but I think on one episode, I think so much to talk about that is actually extended. Yesterday I had to do the third part.
Oh yeah. No, it's true. It's absolutely true. And those systems that profit off of pornography and sex selling have conditioned our young people and are seeking to condition them at a younger and younger and younger age to be open to and okay with. And now it's gotten to the point where they don't even realize it's mind blowing to me. They don't see it. They don't care if they do see it. It's just okay.
It's just okay. And people is ignoring and is that the actresses, those girls that you see on camera that they are loving, they are like wanting, they're asking for, honestly, there is like some of them that they're starting, they started speaking out. They were forced. They sign up for one specific scene, and then they are in there surrounded with 20 or 30 males, because we just think that it's three or four, you know, like the couple is performing, plus somebody on the camera, maybe two, or somebody on the lighting. No, that's not. It's like a complete Hollywood set with 30 people. And what would you do if you sign up for, I don't know, like cleaning dishes, and suddenly you have somebody making you do something that you don't want, and you realize, can I fight? Maybe. What about if I fight the person who is on top of me? What about the other 29? Is it worth it?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can go from watching the evolution of softcore porn, now all the way to torture porn and snuff films, and it's horrific. It's just horrific. And we need to talk about it, because those young people who are tippy-toeing into pornography, either by, I mean, it's a thing now for young boys and girls to make their, you know, losing their virginity tapes and selling them to porn companies. And like, there's all kinds of different things, like to secretly videotape your girlfriend having sex. Don't let her know, but send us the video. Like there's all kinds of things going on, you know? And I just want to say to anybody who's thinking about, yeah, you've got those situations, right? Like those porn stars, and I say that loosely, those victims, and, you know, obviously there's many survivors who have come out of that industry that can speak to it far more compelling than I can. But if those people are not able to get the agreement or to get the participation through fame, money, drugs, they're not, there's people who will bite into that apple for a second. But if they're not able to get you through that hook, it's going to be through violence, manipulation, coercion.
Correct.
You know, and like it's just, it's such a deep, deep subject. And that's why when I got to North Dakota, we'll jump ahead in that story, and I'm sure we have to close at some point here, but I realized, you know, the male-female ratio was about 100-1, 70-1, 70 men to one female. Clearly, we have a male population here, right, or there in North Dakota. So I really developed a message, a non-shame-based message for men about what they participate in, what they're doing when they go to strip clubs, when they view pornography, when they seek out prostitution, which is highly encouraged in all oil fields.
Well, I just dialed for everybody.
Yeah, it really, really, really would. But I think that that's when I became a major threat, is because I was starting to have an effect. My message, my story, my work was starting to have an effect on men, and they were responding positively.
That's,
they weren't buying. They're, you know, the strip clubs were closing. The things that were going on were being minimized. Like, I can look back and I see so many situations now where me being bold and me being proactive and me doing the right thing, you know,
yeah,
paid off positively in that community.
And
not easy. That's all I want to say. I mean, I'm just so in awe that God gave me the strength and the ability, and then also took the time to stretch me and show me there's more. But you know, it's not easy. Any survivor who is looking to coming into being a survivor leader through sharing your story or whatever it is, I just want to say, count the costs. Because as you have successes, more doors will open, your lanes will expand, there will be other lanes to choose from, and you can never get away from sharing your story. Once it's out there, it's a beautiful thing to be a part of. It's empowering. It's effective. But there's a cost that comes along with that.
So what are the necessities? What are the things that victims need immediately after they are being rescued? And what are some of the areas that need to be improved in order to keep helping survivors?
Well, I think there's different levels, right? You've got crisis care. You've got outreach, really, where you're potentially going in to build relationship, drop and plant seeds, giving hope, letting people know there's a way out. So you've got outreach, and it's always rooted and based in relationship, always. There's so many people out there doing excellent trainings on being a service provider and what does services look like. But that outreach, building relationship, crisis care is about building relationship. Programs that are being developed and set up must have a survivor leader I don't just mean a survivor who's getting up to share their story so the organization can raise money. I'm talking about a survivor every step of the way, at the table, in every conversation. So that program is developed not through the eyes of the ally, because how do they know? They know stuff. Like, allies are valuable. They bring a lot of stuff to the table. We cannot do it without them, and they cannot do it without us. But for some reason, survivors get discarded, but that's another podcast.
And
but
because we know everything from the inside, what perspective that that one.
I have a funny story on this. So when I was there's some people that know about this story, but it was actually pretty funny. When I was helping to develop the safe house in Miami, through Project Gold, the house wasn't opened yet, and some of the advocates and so forth went to Costco and stocked up on groceries and all of that. And I was doing a walkthrough with the project manager, and I was opening up the cupboards really just to like look at the pretty dishes. Like, I wasn't looking to find something wrong. I was just like, wow, this is awesome. Like, these girls are going to come into this home and feel so cherished and valued and taken care of. Like, this is so beautiful. But all of a sudden, right in front of my face was a big, huge jar of pickles. And I was like, nope, that can't be in here. You got to take that out. That's triggering. Now, it wasn't triggering for me, but anything that's phallic shaped or can, you know what I mean? Like, anything like that, when you've got a girl in crisis who's just been severely traumatized, you don't want anything shaped like a male part. And it's just that one less thing. And they were actually like, oh my gosh, yes,
what
it is.
Talking about? Wow.
Right. You know, a lot of these women who weren't even survivors were like, yeah, actually, you're right. We need to take that out. Never would have thought about it. But my mind is wired in a completely crazy way. Thank goodness that I was able to see that. And so that's one minor example of why it's so important to have survivors at every step of the in every conversation at every table.
So if you're listening to us and you're thinking into opening a safe house, please, no pickle jars, okay?
That's just me being able to stand in authority as a survivor leader and say, no, I am the expert, and I'm not saying that again, like conceited. I'm saying that humbly. I really am. But, that's just part of things aren't going to change until we start really, truly speaking up. And we've seen a huge influx of ally people coming in, starting programs, leading survivor leaders out of the program, and they're doing incredible harm, and they're consuming funds that could be going to programs that are doing the work.
Oh my God, I love how bold you are. I love it, love it, love it, love it.
Well, I mean, I can't tell you how many, construction workers who own construction companies don't know how to do their books, so they bring in a bookkeeper. That's just one example, and a lot of businesses fail because people don't hand over those jobs to people who know them. So why make the mistake of leaving survivors out of the conversation?
Yeah, because
it's just,
businesses just deal with objects. We are dealing with lives, with souls,
yeah,
with hearts, with hopes. So it's not the same. So we need to
be I mean, I have so many stories of re-exploitation within this movement, that now I can look back at it and almost, it's not funny, but I can almost laugh. Whereas when I first got into this, right, I was like in shock. And I learned a lot through that. And now, that confidence is there to where it's like, if they're not going to listen to what I'm saying when all I am trying to do is help them accomplish what they're setting out to do, then they're not fit to do this work. They're not.
That's right. And very, very powerful message right there. If you are not going to listen to survivors, so you want to serve survivors, don't even open, because you're losing your time and someone else can just go to the right place to be up. So yeah, definitely. Like, we have to put in perspective what we want and what we're aiming and try to do it as the best that we can. Oh my God, this has been an amazing conversation. You are an incredible woman. You are an incredible leader, and I do admire you so much. I've been following and research you for a long time. I'm not a stalker, but you are part of my healing. Honestly, when I was, you know, like, I was out and everything, and somebody came to me and asked me, why don't you share your story? That was one of the things that I was more afraid. And so
people
came and told me about you. And I started researching and everything. And I saw how you have helped so many people. And I'm talking about 4 years ago.
You're going to, I have goosebumps and you're going to make me cry.
That's
just amazing.
I've been like, when I was first out and they start telling me all that, I was like, how she made this horrible experience into something that can actually touch a victim's, a survivor's heart. How can I be a little bit more like her in putting my heart in such a way that my mind, my traumatized mind, can actually understand what I'm going through? So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for all this work, for just have the words, for speaking every time that you can to make us understand that we don't have to be ashamed for what somebody else did to us.
No.
So, thank you. I wish you the best. I know that you're going to go places we cannot even imagine, and there's so many doors that you're going to knock and they're going to open, because God are sending those people to you to listen to you. So thank you. So
you know what? You know what? I just want to say, before we say goodbye, thank you for saying that to me. That just helped and encouraged me to continue on. And I am so proud of you. I am so proud of you that you look at where you're at now. Look at what you are doing. You're doing exactly what you felt led to do. And look at the lives that you're changing and the lives that you're going to save. And, you know, so thank you. Thank you for being faithful to do what you feel led to do and your part in the fight against human trafficking. It takes all of us, and I'm so happy to know that I was able to inspire you in some way.
Oh yeah, you definitely did. You're the person I was like, if she can do it, I can do it as well. I'm going to try to do as my best to be like a third part of what you're doing. But I'm so happy that you never stop, even though sometimes you get discouraged and everything. Like, I'm so happy that you're still on the work. It's still fighting for us and for everybody else that can get in there to get out. And so thank you so much for helping us, raising awareness to speak up your story and give so much insight to people outside that they're just listening, you know, like starting researching what's human trafficking and sexual exploitation. There's a lot of people that, you know, thank God they haven't had
that
experience or heard about it, but they need to know. So once again, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Cindy's Voice podcast, it's been my pleasure. And this has been our episode for today. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to us. You can leave your questions or comments in our platform. It can be either Instagram or Facebook at Cindy's Voice Podcast or Twitter at Cindy's Voice Pod. Have a wonderful week. and take care.
Thanks for joining us this week on Cindy's Voice. If you like what you're listening to, like our YouTube channel, Cindy's Voice Podcast, and give us a 5-star review. This means everything to us. Follow us on Instagram at Cindy V. Rivero to receive updates on our latest episode. See you in our next episode. Till then, have a great week.